All this talk of late about affairs and adultery and stuff has had me thinking back, remembering something that happened years and years and years ago. Let's see if I can remember and recollect. It was a Monday. I'd gone down to the temple courts as usual. I was part of a group of young men who met there most days, eager to learn more about God and how to live right. We would meet straight after breakfast at that spot on the left where the sun warmed us in the early morning and where, for a while at least, as the sun climbed, a wall shaded us from the heat of the sun. The talks we had. Someone was always grabbing a newcomer and getting him to come and sit with us and explain things. If the newcomer was young, then we'd argue and debate. But if his beard was long and white, we'd sit reverently and listen, and then tear apart his teaching when he'd gone. That particular Monday morning, Jesus was sitting with us, explaining something. I can't quite remember what it was now. When our group was interrupted by some of the temple staff, they dragged a woman in and stood her in front of our group. Just imagine that. These God-loving men, these hallowed courts, and a woman brought into the middle. It went round later that her name was Susanna. Pharisee Jacob was in charge. He had a bone to pick with Jesus. We seemed to fade into the background as Jesus and Jacob came head to head. You could almost kind of see the lightning spark between them. Jesus and Jacob, head to head. Jacob threw out a challenge to Jesus, like a punch of a fist. This woman has been caught in the very act of adultery. Time slowed down. I've noticed this happen when something really important's going on. In the space of a few moments, I noticed loads of things. I had a whole inner conversation. I thought about lots of different things and then kind of discussed inside myself, with myself. I must admit that in one part of my mind, that simple phrase, the very act of adultery, had set my imagination running. My face, I hope, stayed impassive, but my mind was busy. I looked up at the woman standing there in her nightie and saw that she was beautiful and caught myself thinking, lucky chap. Chap? I wonder who he is. I wonder where he is. Jacob has just said that they were caught in the act, and surely that takes two. So he was caught just as much as she. So where is he now? And to catch them, they must have known where she lived or who she was sleeping with. This is beginning to look suspicious. I'm sure I've heard some rumors about Jesus getting into trouble recently. He's been getting the temple staff seriously annoyed. And only yesterday, I'm sure I heard a rumor about a failed attempt to arrest Jesus. Is this another attempt to stage a showdown? Is this morning's real drama between Jacob and Jesus and the woman is just a stage prop? Pretty fine one, though. I'm supposed to be following the teachings of Moses. I'm supposed to be living a life that pleases God. And what does that teaching say? What does the law teach on this subject? The strict laws of Moses are really uncompromising here. Both Leviticus 20 and Deuteronomy 22, if I remember that right, say adultery is punishable by death. So here I am, supposed to be committed to seeking the ways of God, a lover of God's law, I'm devoted to holiness, and I've just spent all this time eyeing up this woman, lusting. Why can't I stick to my commitments? Why can't I do the things that I commit myself to? Why can't I just hold for 2 minutes together the things that I claim? I just get so annoyed with myself sometimes, with my own wayward thoughts. I'm just so glad that nobody else here can see inside my heart. I'm so glad that nobody can see. I'm so glad that thy weakness is kept secret, that what boils away inside me is hidden from anybody else. I've just been here so many times before, despite every prayer, despite all my effort, despite my commitment, despite my devotion to the ways of God. I just get so angry. Pharisee Jacob is speaking again. You could hear a pin drop. Jacob says that the laws of Moses demand that the woman is stoned to death. Now there's an idea. Something I can do with the anger inside. I can just picture our crowd of men, religious, God-fearing, godly people. I can just imagine us dragging her outside the town, flinging the stones in a display of righteous passion. My hands began to clench as I imagine the scene. I can just see it. As I notice the tightness of my fists, my inner conversation moves on again. And there's a moment of enlightenment. My anger towards Susanna is no more than an attempt to get rid of the anger I feel towards myself. That anger is actually frustration at my own weakness. Anger with my own inner chaos and darkness. It's not hatred of Susanna and her sin. It's hatred of myself and my sin. And maybe everyone else here is fueled by the same displaced self-hatred as I am. Maybe, horror of horrors, the temple staff are in the same agonizing state. Maybe they've found that their old age, their religious devotion, has failed to cure them of this inner torture. Perhaps all their bossy sermons, all their intrusive regulations that direct and control the lives of other people are no more than a misguided attempt to calm their own inner demons. Surely not. Surely these godly and mature leaders are not buffeted by the same storms as I am. Susanna is in real trouble here. Her bad behavior may well bring a barrage of stones raining down upon her. Stones that crash down to wound and hurt and kill. Stones of hatred. Stones of judgment. Stones of condemnation. Stones of rejection. Why was this woman captured while the man escaped? Did he have an important job? Was he even a member of the temple staff? Did high status get him off? Susanna stands here condemned for her behavior. But partly she's standing here because of her gender, her status, her position. All this passed through my head in a moment, while my face has, I hope, remained impassive. And I watched to see what is going to happen next. What has Jacob just said? Moses commanded this woman to be stoned. What do you say, Jesus? So what will Jesus say? What is the right thing to do? This is a trick. I've got it. If Jesus upholds the laws of Moses, he's going to be in trouble with the Romans. They're the only ones these days who can apply the death sentence. But if Jesus rejects the laws of Moses, then we know he can't be a true follower of God. They've got him. Whatever he says, he's caught. But there must be a way forward. Just a minute. Jacob said that Moses commanded stoning. Oh, no, he didn't. He said the death penalty, but not this humiliation. This teacher of the law, Jacob, has misrepresented the law. Although, come to think of it, she does look pretty humiliated already. She's been shamed and dragged in front of this crowd of men. Is this the place where the harshest treatment can be engineered? Is it amongst religious people, where the inner conflict is greatest, that there's the potential, the most potential, for a violent outburst, for an attack against others? These religious leaders seem to have arranged an entrapment. They've contrived an arrest. They've misrepresented the law. They've inflated the punishment. And they've passed judgment in their own hearts. And now they come and ask Jesus what he thinks. If our favorite sunny corner of the court, of the temple courts has become a courtroom this morning, the dock is becoming rather crowded. Susanna's in there. But my thoughts, my lust, my rage places me in the dock too, standing at her shoulder. And the Pharisees, full of scheming and dishonesty, fill up the rest of the space. What is Jesus going to do? To my astonishment, he seems to be disrespecting Pharisee Jacob. He's ignored the question. He's avoiding eye contact. He starts doodling in the dust on the ground. Is he playing for time? Trying to solve the riddle? Searching for a way of escaping this second entrapment? But he doesn't even seem to be thinking much. Just holding silence. The temple staff repeat the question, turning it round, rephrasing it, battering helplessly against the growing silence that engulfs all of us. As the silence fills our mind, it seems as though there's another gear change. Time slows again. And the silence leads to self-examination. Have I been too fond of status and celebrity? Jesus seems to treat everyone the same. Is my life all about trying to appear one thing when in fact I'm another? Is there no one I can be truly honest with? And why, oh why, am I so quick to judge others, so quick to condemn them? Eventually, Jesus speaks for the first time. Let the one among you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her. Ah, there's a challenging scripture. Deuteronomy 17. Moses requires the people who have brought the accusation, the witnesses to the crime, they have to follow it through. They have to throw the first stone. The people with the first-hand evidence now will know who has the evidence. Now we'll know a way forward. And what is Susanna thinking? I'm not sure anymore whether she's actually been caught in bed or whether this is just a trumped-up charge made by false witnesses. I know one thing for certain. If she was caught, then this moment, all her attention will be focused on just one person in the crowd, watching to see whether he will follow through on Moses' commandment. Susanna's not going to lift her eyes from the floor, but her whole being will be waiting, watching, attuned to the merest flicker of movement. If he moves, her fate is sealed. If, on the other hand, this whole thing is a trumped-up charge, then she won't know where to look. Would a false witness stoop even to murder? Jesus has returned to scribbling in the sand, and the silence has wrapped around us again like a fog. No one seems to be moving. Everyone is wrapped in thought. Silence has swallowed up the clamor of condemnation and the threat of violent rejection. As the silence lengthens, Susanna seems to let out a great wordless sigh and to sag as the immediate threat of violence is suspended. But hold on, people are moving. The crowd of temple staff seems to be thinning out. Yes, people are slipping away. They must have been thinking the same thoughts I've been working through. It's as if we all carry those judgment stones in our hands, ready for use. Stones labeled accusation, unfair judgment, sinful behavior, bad thoughts, misrepresentation of the truth. But as the silence rolls, perhaps we've learnt that if we do attempt to throw them and let them loose, our aim is poor. Like children on the beach throwing stones, sometimes it seems like I throw it into the air. And my aim is so poor, it falls back on my own head to crush and hurt and wound me. And the elders have at last shown themselves to be the wisest ones. They've been the first to realize, the first indeed to publicly admit their own frailty, the first to slip away. Finally, all the temple staff have gone, and only Susanna is standing there, still standing in front of us, gazing woodenly at the dusty ground. How is she feeling? This teacher has just intimidated and dismissed the temple staff. What will he do next? She's certainly not out of trouble yet. The temple staff's fire of rage and violence has been suffocated and put out by his implacable silence. But he is now going to pass judgment. This place between rejection and acceptance, this middle place of silence, is a terrible wasteland where surely no one can live for long. There's no longer any talk of rejection and hate, but neither is there anything positive. No warmth, no human contact, no smile, no eye contact, no relationship. I can still see Susanna and Jesus in my mind's eye, both staring down at the ground. Never have two people looked so hard, so long at the ground, while their whole bodies have been attuned and sensitized to every nuance of the people around them. Finally, after another eternity of silence, Jesus stops writing in the dust. And as he looks up, he manages somehow to capture Susanna's eye and to draw her attention up too. Finally, they're face to face, eye to eye. And Jesus softly speaks to her. Her accusers have spoken about her, but no one until this moment has spoken to her. No one has accorded her the dignity of her own voice. Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you? And she replied, no one, sir. Then Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Go, and from now on, sin no more. Susanna was given a clear statement of acceptance. Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. You could almost see the tension drain away. She'd moved from rejection through this intermediate wasteland of silence into acceptance. She'd moved from the fury and the rage of rejection through a place where she just didn't know. A place where her identity was uncertain, where her relationships were uncertain, where her future was uncertain, into a place of acceptance. She had thought that this mourning would see an end to her life, but instead, it's the beginning of a new lifestyle. This positive acceptance had brought her through into a new land. And remembering looking back on that story, looking back on those moments so long ago and yet so vivid, so poignant, so rich. I remember that for Jesus, that kind of acceptance was no weak thing. There and again, he challenged powerful people. Jesus made friends with people considered expendable. And eventually, Jesus fell victim to the envy and displaced self-hatred of those in power. Jesus followed that same path through the pain of rejection, through the crucifixion, through hatred and death, through 3 days in that terrible wasteland of the tomb, and out into joy and sunshine and resurrection. It's not enough to remember that his death on the cross silenced the storm of rejection for me. But I must travel forward into the gladness of positive acceptance. And nor must I leave others in the place of rejection or even in the wasteland of uncertain silence, but instead welcome them into full acceptance, into that place of connection, into that belonging.